I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Starting tomorrow night, the 31st of January, and running until the 9th of February, is the latest from Mitch and Murray Productions, the Western Canadian premiere of Heroes of the Fourth Turning. The award-winning play, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, takes place just after the 2017 Charlottesville riots. It's a reunion of four young conservatives who've gathered to toast the newly inducted president of their Catholic college. What's borne out in the play is a look at generational politics, as well as the conversations that we all need to have in our political discourse, even in some of our families, but can't because of how polarized everything is. Joining me now is John Murphy, the director of the production, which stars Elizabeth Barrett, Jennifer Clement, Aaron Craven, Neera Caracas, and David Kaye. I'll ask Mr. Murphy about the Will Arbery play, about Arbery's own upbringing and background that might be useful to understand from where he writes. Arbery wrote on the HBO series Succession. The production is at Studio 16, 1551 West 7th. Visit mitchandmurrayproductions.com for tickets and information. We taped the interview December 31st. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, John Murphy. Mr. Murphy, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. This production, as I was reading before we started, it's a Western Canadian premiere. It is a relatively new show, is that right?
Yeah, it premiered in the States, Workshop Productions, in 2018. I think it was on Broadway 2019, and it might have got shut down because of COVID. Mm. It's an Obie winner for Best Play. It was a Pulitzer nominee. The writer, he's one of the staff writers on Succession. It's a very political play about recent social issues.
So it's set in 2017, just 1 week after the Charlottesville riots. You know, this is looking back, you know, it's a pivotal moment where we realize, I mean, a lot of people probably realize that a year before, maybe, where everything sort of changed in the discourse, changed in the politics. But you know, I'm thinking back to Trump's, you know, both sides comment, which happened after mm-hmm. Charlottesville. I mean, something changed there in retrospect, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fascinating play, you know, in that respect. You know, just in terms of the both sides thing, of, you know, with the advent of identitarianism or wokeism, if you want to call it, and on the far right side, people like Steve Bannon, we live in this culture that's kind of coming to an end now, where the only voices we hear are the extreme left and the extreme right, and people, moderate left, moderate right people, are, you know, crushed on social media, or their voices that just aren't heard. Either they're canceled or they're shamed into silence or just afraid to talk. This is a play where, you know, four very right-wing conservative Catholics get together for a reunion, university reunion 7 years after they graduated. And what's interesting about it is that it shows that the right isn't a monolith of thought, mm-hmm. which is what we're told to believe. We're also, you know, or people on the left, which I am. Well, I used to be on the left. Then, you know, the current sort of, ultra-left situation made me more of a center person. Mm-hmm. But it shows that people on the right, it's not a monolith of thought. You know, and they're not a bunch of uneducated rubes. You know, falling for Trump's platform and for his, you know, what to us is obviously, you know, a snake oil salesman and a bunch of lies. There are educated people, university-educated people, intelligent people, and all four of these former students get into these huge debates on big issues like abortion and gun laws and, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff, all these hot-button issues. And it shows that it's not everyone is the same on the right, and that there is a diversity of thought on the right, which obviously means that there's a diversity of thought on the left as well. And, you know, what I love about the play is that most people in the audience are going to be left-leaning people, and they're going to sit and listen to the conversations that they never get to hear. And the problem with our society right now, a big part of it, is that there aren't any conversations anymore. People are afraid to have conversations. They're afraid to talk about politics or religion or have big conversations. So, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that brings up an interesting point, is that amongst these four young conservatives, there is a diversity of thought. They obviously are divided over a number of issues, as you just said. I guess the thing that I'm wondering about, I mean, especially in these next 4 years ahead of us, is whether there'll be that room to have the conversations that we ought to have. I mean, it just seems at this moment, you know, at the end of 2024, at the beginning of 2025, I don't know if we'll be able to talk to one another in 4 years, say.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's getting better. You know, I feel like cancel culture has started to fade. I mean, it certainly has on the left in a way. You know, Elon Musk, you know, say what you want about him. And, you know, what he did with Twitter in many ways was just bad leadership and bad business policies. But what he did was he kind of took the teeth out of the far left ability to form a woke mob and destroy anybody who wanted to have some sort of nuanced conversation by not making those kind of posts go viral. So, you know, we're kind of in a new era right now. I hope we're in a new era where the left and the right is not so far left, not so far right, and that we can start to have some conversations. And I think a play like this play is necessary. Mm-hmm. For people to see and realize we can have conversations, and you can sit down for an hour and a half and listen to people that you vehemently disagree with, and hear what they have to say. And the great thing about, you know, this play and all great plays is that the characters have incredible contradictions. They say one thing one moment, and then they say the opposite thing the next. There's one character who said, you know, when I voted for Trump, I went home and I threw up. Mm-hmm. So he's torn, you know, by what he felt a vote that he had to make. Whereas, you know, he's personally disgusted by Trump, but he feels because of his Catholic upbringing and his own personal ideologies, he has to. This is the vote that he had to make, but he's at the same time, he's disgusted with himself.
Yeah, I guess this points to just how relevant it is, and not just in that time of 2017, but mm-hmm. in 2024, 2025, when mm-hmm. I guess it's you know, they say that history doesn't repeat itself, but I mean there are certain patterns, aren't there? And there's a pattern here. You know, it's a stark one, and one that's 8 years later, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the one good thing about Trump getting back in office is that it's better for this play.
it would hit very differently if he didn't win, did you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you stage a production like this, you know, for Canadians especially, you know, who probably don't understand the United States as much as we think we'd like to, mm-hmm. What do you think we'll get out of it? I mean, you've alluded to it already that we'll learn, you know, the nuance in the right. But, I mean, there must be something that you even learned about Americans as a result of directing this production.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been following American politics really closely. You know, and mainly it was due to Trump, you know. And so I feel like I've just learned a lot about American politics over the past, you know, 10 years anyways, you know, kind of thing. And except for in the past, you know, since Trump won, I've just been trying not to read about him and get embroiled in the outrage and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But we start rehearsals in the new year, and so I'm going to have to dig back into the pool of coverage. But I mean, how it's relevant to Canadians. I mean, I think this is, you know, this is a worldwide phenomenon. We're seeing, you know, populist leaders and far right parties doing, you know, better and better in elections in France and Germany. In Canada, you know, we're probably moving from a little liberal government to a conservative government. You know, in Alberta, an absolute maniac is running Alberta, you know. So I think it's very relevant to us, you know, and they are our neighbors. So what happens down there, you know, is about to have profound consequences on our lives, you know, with a 25% tariffs being proposed and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, Trump, you know, is such a monumental figure, and he is, you know, the leader of the most powerful country in the world. And the repercussions of that, not just real world repercussions like the economy and our borders and things like that, but ideological repercussions, you know. So I think it's incredibly relevant. And we've all felt the thing I was talking about originally, this fear of speaking our mind. We've all felt in Canada this thing of ooh, should I comment on that, or mm-hmm. maybe I should just not say anything, you know, that sort of tentativeness and that lack of engagement. So I think everyone's feeling that. So I think it's fairly universal.
So I notice that the description of the play talks about four young conservatives gathering together to celebrate the election of a new president at their college. But there are five people in the production. Who's the fifth character? Yeah.
The fifth character is the president, is their former professor.
I see.
Who's just been elected as president. So they've come back to celebrate her.
Yeah. What can you tell us about the things that they discuss without having to give away, you know, what happens in the show? But, I mean, just as a teaser, if you will. You've already alluded to some of the subjects they talk about. But what do you because you're directing actors in this, I'm sure you're having conversations about what they're talking about in the show.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about what happens, say?
Well, they talk about the fourth turning, which is this work. It's by a couple of sociologists, William Strauss and Neil Howe, who wrote this theory about the fourth. That there are four turnings in a society over 80 years. So there are different periods. So there's the high period, which you would call, you know, the 1950s, where there's lots of prosperity and everything's going great. Then the awakening is like the 1960s, where people start to question things. Then there's an unraveling, or not in the 80s into, you know, the early 2000s, culture wars, and then this area of crisis. So the Great Wall Street crash of 1929 until 1945 was this time of crisis that they theorize, and that we are now entering this era of crisis, which means war, which means rebellion. You know, and I mean, the other good thing about Trump winning the presidency is that there wasn't a civil war.
Mm.
Because if he had lost, you know, this, all these election deniers that, you know, were seen as wingnuts and lunatics, you know, the first time it happened, were now, you know, credible people and people in places of power this time, you know, and it was slightly terrifying, the potential of what could have happened. And so one of the characters, who is a Trumpite and a Bannonite, you know, she has this blog and she's very political, and she's kind of the most aggressive of the former students, who believes that this fourth turning is coming and that the millennials, because it's set in 2017, mm-hmm. they're all in their late 20s at the time. One of them is sort of mid-late 30s, that they are the heroes of the fourth turn, that they are the ones that have to go to battle to save this country.
And in Arbery's own background, I understand he comes from a large conservative Christian family. That obviously feeds into this play that he's written, right?
Yeah, his parents run a conservative Catholic university, a small Catholic university in Wyoming in the middle of nowhere. And that's where this play is set.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really knows, he really knows what he's talking about, you know, and he has a lot of love for these characters, as flawed as they are, and he really understands them, you know. And what I think is brilliant about the play, again, you know, what great writing does is, you know, a writer makes you fall in love with the characters. Even if you don't sympathize with them, yeah. Even if you don't agree with them, you fall in love with them. And he makes us fall in love with them, I think, because of their contradictions and because of their struggles. You know, one of the characters is really struggling with faith. You know, he doesn't feel anything. He is a Catholic. He's devoted to it. But he admits in his drunken stupor that he doesn't feel anything. That he doesn't, and he's struggling with his faith, you know, which is it's a wonderful character, you know.
Yeah, the characters you're describing in the show really reflect a lot of our society, even ourselves. We're loath to admit, probably. Mm-hmm. We're going through a time here where we're obviously worried about the future, mm-hmm. And at the same time. We're wondering what we're having to give up to just get on with things, you know, and that's the thing that I've been thinking about since November is, what am I, you know, how am I going to get on in the next 4 or 5 years? Mm-hmm. And what am I going to have to say, give up in terms of my, you know, whatever I believe, mm-hmm. Just to you know, to use that word appeasement, to appease, say, the people around me. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that it's not a lot because I'm someone who is obviously virtuous and has a lot of integrity. Mm-hmm. But you know, we will have to. I mean, you mentioned tariffs a moment ago. I mean, that's why, you know, Trudeau and his group have been going down to Mar-a-Lago is because they're trying mm-hmm. to negotiate something here you know, maybe they will succeed, but I mean, in the process, they'll have to give up something to him, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, man, who knows what the future holds?
But that's a great thing about this show is that this play especially is that these characters do reflect us, don't they? Is whether they're ourselves individually as characters, but I mean. The society itself, I mean, there is a reason why he won in November, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and there's been myriad, you know, theories that have been going around as to why, whether it's racism and sexism against Kamala Harris.
Sure.
Whether it's, you know, a reaction to wokeism, you know, all of these possibilities, you know, and you think, how could everyone, so many people be duped by this guy, the snake oil salesman?
Yeah.
But I think it's a part of, it's a great side of us and it's a double-edged sword. We go to the theater and we see a story and we believe it's true.
Mm-hmm.
We sit there in the dark and we get involved and our imaginations allow us to believe things that are absolutely made up to be completely real and we get immersed in it. We care about the characters. We wonder what's going to happen. We worry about them. And I think it's the same with Trump. It's our ability to believe in things that aren't real, that he is playing this character that is a champion of the middle class, when obviously he doesn't give a shit about them.
Yeah.
But he's able to, whether you want to say that human beings are innately gullible or whether we are just incredibly imaginative people, who love stories, and he presents a story that they like and that they believe to be true.
And it's a narrative that 15 years ago would have been impossible to realize. If you would have said 15, 20 years ago that this guy, who was a celebrity at that point for a very long time, even before then, would become mm-hmm. president of the United States, we would think that you were absurd silly, but, you know, here we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
That guy's been elected twice now as president of the United States.
Yeah, well, I mean, he comes from show business, you know, and the connection between imagination and believing in stories, and you know, people in show business are storytellers.
Yeah.
You know, The Apprentice is a story.
Yeah,
you know?
Indeed. Indeed. It is, as you mentioned a moment ago, just a relevant production and timely as well. I guess you didn't expect when they announced the production that this would coincide with, say, an inauguration, would it?
Well, when Aaron Craven from Mission Murray pitched the show to me, and I asked him when he wanted to put it on, he said end of January. We were both, after I read it and I knew what the play was about, we both discussed the timing and thought about how different it would be, as we were talking about earlier, if Kamala Harris won or if Trump won, you know. And so, yeah, they would have been radically different shows. It would have had a radically different tone to it if Kamala Harris had, had won the presidency. But, yeah, it's the timing of it is fortuitous.
Indeed. Indeed. Have you worked with Mitch and Murray Productions before?
I have, yeah. I've worked with Aaron a couple of times. I directed a show for him called 50 Words back in 2011. And I love working with Aaron. He's just such a firebrand. He's just such a shit disturber, and he always puts on challenging plays that are going to challenge the audience, and you know, hot button plays about race, about sexism, about this, like anything that's a hot topic, he's doing it. And he also tends to do contemporary modern American playwrights, which there's not a lot of other theater companies doing that in town. So he's really filling a niche in town. And it's some of the greatest writing in the world right now that he's bringing to Vancouver stages. Yeah. And then I acted in a production of Body Awareness, and Annie Baker play, who's one of my favorite modern American playwrights, or international playwrights, that he directed. And, yeah, he's just a pleasure to work with, and he's a friend of mine now as well. And I just love working with him, and his wife Kate, who's a part of the company as well, is just a dream to work with. And we got a killer cast and a killer design team, and I'm very excited.
This space at 1551 West 7th, Studio 16. I've never been there. What is it like to put a show in that space?
It's a smaller space. It's a black box theater. It's about, 40 feet by 40 feet. And then the audience, it's set up as a proscenium sort of stage, where the audience is just facing the stage, kind of classic sort of setup, which we decide to leave for this show because I wanted kind of a set in Wyoming. I wanted this big sky feeling, this widescreen CinemaScope kind of feeling to the stage. It's very intimate, you don't have to, you don't have to raise your voice, you don't have to project really. You can really talk at a conversational, level and do acting that is more filmic than theatrical, which is really nice, especially with a play like this, which is, realism it's a great space. It's a wonderful space. I've done a bunch of plays there.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing the show in that space. I so appreciate your time today, John. Break a leg, as they say, in your business.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
The website for tickets and information is at mitchandmurrayproductions.com. Heroes of the Fourth Turning is at Studio 16 in Vancouver from tomorrow night, the 31st of January through the 9th of February, 1551 West 7th. The production's director, John Murphy, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.